Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines that I call USA Inc. Today's date is September the 26th in the year that they say is 2016. It is a Monday, so I hope that you all made it through the weekend safe and sound, especially those of those citizens and residents of Charlotte who are out in the streets protesting and have been doing so for 5 days straight, including over the weekend. We do know, like on those first few nights, that a young black man who wanted to follow in his grandmother's footsteps and say to his yet-to-be-born grandchildren that he participated in a demonstration for social justice, just as his grandmother had in the 1960s. So, no, I haven't heard of any reported injuries or deaths or anything like that occurring since that tragic night, but a lot has been occurring. So welcome to Black Talk Radio News. Today I do not have a guest scheduled, so we're just going to go over the news, and as always, interested in hearing the views of our listeners. And in order to share your views with us live on air, give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Of course, you hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. If you are outside of the United States and you have at least an internet connection and a pair of headsets, you can make a free call using the web-based flash phone that you will find on the profile page for Black Talk Radio News, as well as today's promo for today's program. All right, and there's the studio line. Let me give that out, 704-951-5030, and those numbers will be given out after we take breaks, in case you did not catch that. So, want to go over some network news first. BTRcommunity.com is the new online social community that has been launched as a safe digital space for black people by the Black Talk Media Project. And that is where I will be sharing a lot of news and information that I share. If you are already a member of the BTR community, make sure you send me a friend request. I'm always interested in interacting with listeners of the program, members of the community, and what have you, exchanging ideas, just hashing things out, discussing things. Yeah. So, But before I go over some of that news of the day, because there is so much news that's out there that I think people should know about, but you just don't have time during a one-hour program or a two-hour program, even a three-hour program. It would not be enough time for us to just report all, give you all of the battlefield reports that's going on, you know, in the field out there. So, before I get into some of that news, I want to just tell you what the main topics or the main news matter that I want to discuss with you later. So, New Abolitionist Radio, which many of you who are regular listeners of the program and, of course, the donors to the Black Talk Media Project, you got an email this morning with a photo of the award that was given to New Abolitionist Radio and Max Parthas, who is a co-host and co-producer of that radio program that started in 2012 with the mission to spread the word of abolition to whoever would listen. And since 2012, I can look at, just looking at mainstream media reports, alternative media reports, looking at signage and listening to the language that many young activists, young and old, I should say, activists are using, looking at the prison slavery strikes that are going on in some of the prisons across the nation, I can without a doubt say that Black Talk Media Project, via that program, New Abolitionist Radio, did accomplish part of its mission, which was to spread awareness that slavery was never abolished. Max should be home by now. I know he had a 12-hour drive as he was in Missouri at the Conference for the Missouri Cure. That's an annual conference that this was the third annual conference in Missouri, and he had a lot of good news to tell me as he was still in Missouri on the phone, and just a lot of exciting news. But I know he wants to save some of that news or share some of that news with those listeners on New Abolitionist Radio, which comes on Wednesday nights on Black Talk Radio at 8:00 p.m. Eastern time. So, but that is the first time or the first award or recognition that the Black Talk Media Project has gotten from an organization or some outside entity that give awards or anything like that. It's the first one that we have received for the work that we do. But the biggest reward that we do receive, I mean, people who are donors, people who consume the media, they let us know all the time via emails. Sometimes they call in on the phone and they express, you know, their thanks for the network and thanks for the radio station and thanks for the program. So I don't want to make it seem like nobody has been recognizing us, but you know, this is an official ceremony they had, and Max got to give a acceptance speech. And so again, shout out to Max as well as Johannin, who is the other co-host of the program, who was there in attendance at the Missouri Cures third annual conference, as well as Tribal Rain, who is Max's wife and fellow abolitionist, who treated the people to some of her revolutionary freedom poetry, I'm sure. And so, yeah, definitely looking forward to hearing a more fuller report from Max, which I'm sure he will share on New Abolitionist Radio. Okay, so that's some news that I wanted to share about the network. And again, we did send out that email with a photograph of the little nice plaque that they engraved. It was really, really nice. And it again, you know, it's really special because it's the first actually, you know, award that we have received in 8 years for the work, any kind of work that we do related to media and social justice and primarily the cause of abolition. So also considering that North Carolina, and I live in North Carolina, the home base of the Black Talk Media Project, which is a North Carolina-based nonprofit, We're based right outside of Charlotte. And, of course, I have friends and family members, blood, you know, family members that live in Charlotte, as well as friends in the activist community that I have known for years. And, of course, BTR News is going to continue to cover the protests that emerged from spontaneous demonstrations around the city the day Keith Lamont Scott was gunned down in the parking lot of his apartment complex. So 5 days straight, these protests have been going on in Charlotte, and I just want to cover some of that news. While I don't know if y'all saw this one, trying to get ahead of it, because the racist white media platforms like Breitbart are already trying to put their spin on this. But you had a white male looking for trouble at these protests who got in his car, him and his friends, drove down to Charlotte, to the city, to drive through the protests. And this man was brandishing a gun, and it was caught on film by a reporter. But not only was him brandishing a gun at protesters as he tried to drive through, and everybody saw the scene, everybody in the city knew that people, thousands of people, were occupying their streets in uptown Charlotte. So this guy looking for trouble probably was under the influence as well. Get that liquid courage and then, you know, arm yourself with a gun and then you go drive to a protest. So all of this was caught on film. But it was all, what else was caught on film was that Charlotte Mecklenburg slave catcher saw this man, heard the commotion with the protesters saying he has a gun. Some of them running away, but just a couple of them, they didn't really panic or anything like that. Even after the man jumped out the car with the gun, they did not run or panic. But then here comes this slave catcher. He gets back in the car, and the slave catcher basically just ushers him away and lets him, you know, go about doing what he was doing. So he don't know what that man was going to do after he let him go. Maybe he was going to go threaten and shoot somebody else. And so Breitbart is trying to portray this as a Second Amendment gun issue. Well, I'm sorry, but in the state of North Carolina, your Second Amendment rights are suspended during a protest and civil unrest, according to state law. But your Second Amendment rights do not give you a right to brandish a firearm, as the Charlotte slave catchers are insinuating to us, trying to justify that Mr. Scott was brandishing the firearm, which I did not see in the video, does not show that. And so here we have a white individual, a white male, suspected racist, brandishing a firearm in a threatening manner, issuing threats to peaceful protesters, I might add, peaceful people, unarmed people, and him and his thug friends looking for a fight. So I posted the video in the program description. It is someone posted it on YouTube, but a local, I assume Charlotte reporter, recorded this, and she posted the original video to Twitter, which is where I saw it, under the hashtag Charlotte Protest. So other news related, of course, y'all may know by now, the Charlotte slave catchers have been pressured by the protesters in demonstrations in different parts of the city to release the recorded videos of the shooting of Mr. Keith Scott that they have in their possession, and they may even have more. But the videos, I don't need to see anymore. For anybody that's seen that video, you know it's a whole lot going on in that video. But what I did not see going on in that video was any kind of threatening movements or furtive movements, to use police language, slave catcher's language. He didn't make any furtive movements. He was backing away with his hand, both his hands down at his side. No one can, that's being honest with you, can dispute that. And he was gunned down. within seconds after exiting his vehicle. And so we, you know, it's just quite not surprising, but it is just, again, more evidence that there are disparities in the enforcement of slave catcher laws, or the laws to enforce slavery in this country, where white criminals are given a pass and all black people are suspected as being criminals, whether they committing a crime or not. So definitely we can talk about that. Let me read this. If people don't seem to grasp what protests accomplish, because over the weekend I've heard people, and we've heard it for years, but you know, this speaks to why there is so much disunity in the community, as I heard people bad-mouthing protesters in general, bad-mouthing the tactic of protesting or demonstrating, making illogical statements like they don't know who these people are protesting, wherever they may be on the planet, as it's not something unique that to black people. You know, it happens all over the planet wherever oppression exists, state-sanctioned oppression, I may add, when the state, and I'm not just talking about the state of North Carolina, but I'm talking about like a nation state. So whenever that's going on, you see people protest. It's just a natural human reaction. And I just, you know, if you don't get down with the protesting for whatever reason, you don't have to badmouth them. And if you think that our liberty and freedom lies in another direction, then just promote that direction and tell us all the positive things about that, your direction, and other people with like minds and what y'all working on. But at the same time, I can say the same thing to you that people say about protesting, that no matter what you do individually, no individual strategy or tactic has shown itself to have stopped any oppression that any people have faced, let alone black people. So that's why I thought that I would make that a segment on today's program and just look back to what people like Martin Luther King Jr. said about protesting or rioting. He was speaking specifically on rioting. Rioting, of course, involves violence and destruction of property, which I think has value. And I explain the reasons why later in the broadcast. But what Malcolm X said about quote unquote riots. But again, you know, let's not confuse a riot with a protest. And riots and protests can happen simultaneously. One area of the city, a group of protesters who may not like the forceful way that slave catchers are trying to break up their assemblies to express themselves in public about, you know, something that happened in the city that is a public issue, and they didn't like it, the way that they were being coerced to disband. So they retaliate with violence. Violence begets violence. So they do the natural thing. They throw rocks. They throw bottles. They then act with the violent act, return the violent energy that is directed against them, which I would add is directed against Americans, citizens, 24/7 in this country. You got 3 citizens a day being killed by slave catchers in this country, and many untold more being beaten near to death. But if they don't die, then they don't get counted as being killed by police. So that might be a new database. But again, you know, also I wanted to take it back even further in history, because a lot of times we do seem to stop in the 60s, or we seem to think that our history just goes to the period of enslavement, which is ongoing, by the way, so let's make no mistake about that. But pre 1865 abolitionists, how were they? What were some of the strategies and tactics they were using in their efforts to abolish slavery? And so, I mean, that's why, again, I don't like and I'm going to have to, I've done it in the past, and I'm going to have to also work on myself to make sure, unless it is just plain and obvious to me and the evidence suggests that something is just so illogical when I want to warn people, but otherwise, I'm not going to be criticizing how other people rebel against the system or how they fight against the system. There are 9 different areas of people activity. Black folks need to master all of them. But there is one people activity that is the master of all other people activities, and that's politics. So when I hear people try to belittle electoral politics or the impact that it has on your day-to-day life, and yeah, we can certainly talk about the corruption of the federal electoral system, but when we're talking about local politics, which a lot of black activists, young millennial activists, they're focused on the local level. They're not so much really focusing on the federal election. You don't hear any of them endorsing Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. The only people, black organizations you hear endorsing either of those people are your churches, your pastors, your clergy, and those who head up organizations that depend on their 501c3 federal tax exempt status and gets a lot of grants and funding from it. And so all they're doing is they know whose side their biscuits are buttered by. Some trying to get their butter biscuits from Trump. Others are trying to get their butter biscuits from Clinton. But you don't see no grassroots organizations endorsing anyone in the federal elections. But what they have been doing is focusing on local electoral politics, and have had success in getting prosecutors who are allowing slave catchers to get away with murder and not upholding a system, not trying to implement a system of justice and right the wrongs of an injustice system, but we're part of that system. Without those young millennials turning out to vote in Chicago, turning out to vote in Cleveland, not only just turning out to vote, but getting others to vote, participating in it fully. If you're going to do an activity, do it right. Don't have acid, as they say. Know what you're doing. And they were phone banking. They were engaged in get out the vote campaigns and voter education. And they got these people out of office. Now, we don't know if the next person is going to be any better, but that next person knows that they under a microscope and they can get gone too. So that is where most of these young millennials, college students, and you know, others who are of various different ages are helping them as well. But it is largely a young people movement, and we want to act like they're so, some of us want to act like they don't know what they're doing, they so stupid, and this is not going to work, and what have you. Instead of you just focusing on what you're doing and how what you're doing is working. But again, nothing you do as an individual, and I'm talking about even if you're just a group of individuals with like mind focused on one area, let's just say that area is black business building and circulating black dollars, black economics, and all of that. You can do that, and it is needed, but that alone may not bring about the desired results, as we can see, look at history of protest in this country. Hundreds of years of protests, demonstrations, strategies laid out by individuals and organizations. And we can learn and see what worked, what didn't work, why they did this, why they did that, what was the intent, what was the outcome or the impact on the system because of what they did. So we just really got all of this history. And I didn't know this, but there has been over 100 protests and demonstrations over the killing of American citizens in 2016 alone. Over 100 documented protests and demonstrations, whether they had elements of violence, whether they were nonviolent, don't matter. Both groups were outraged over slave catchers killing American citizens, which I think is up into about 800, maybe possibly 800, go to kill by police.net, and you can get the figure, the exact figure. I trust their database more than others because it's maintained by grassroots people I have interacted with, including interviewed on this network. So definitely want to look into that. Speaking of getting questions answered, I want to thank the listener who sent me an email last night who lives in Washington, D.C., and had the privilege of going to the new African American Museum that is on the Washington Mall. And I had done a program, I think it was last week, might have been a week and a half ago. I asked a question. See, we always supposed to ask questions. And I got to train myself better on that, not to make accusations or allegations unless I have proof and whatnot, but to ask questions. If I don't understand why somebody doing something, if I don't understand what's going on somewhere, ask questions. And maybe the universe will answer those questions. So I put out in the universe, I asked that question about a couple of questions, whether or not the new African American Museum was promoting racism and white supremacy. And I also asked, where would it start its historical timeline? Pre-colonial period, the colonial period, the Civil War period, the Civil Rights / Black Power period, this current period. You know, how much Afro-American history would it cover? Okay, and last but not least, I came across some more history of Afro-Carolinians in my home state of North Carolina. Apparently 5,000 Afro-Carolinians picked up arms during the Civil War to end slavery, but was of course betrayed by the treacherous Abraham Lincoln. So those are some of the stories, main stories that I want to get into with you today. Before I do that, when I come on the other side of the break, I'm just going to share a few headlines because, again, there's a lot of stuff out there that you should be made aware of that you just, you know, I just simply can't devote much time to talking about, you know, the different nuances of the story or related issues or, you know, getting in depth discussions. But the other stuff that I have just went over, I want to hear from you. Please call in when I'm talking about whatever the topic is. Don't wait till the last minute if you have a question or a comment. But again, I want to thank that listener because that was some good news. I was very suspicious. And I was thinking about this last night. George Bush is still a racist. George W. Bush still a racist. His father, too. They have committed crimes against humanity. I still think that Representative John Lewis isn't doing all that he can do to combat racism and slavery in this country. But I do want to give credit where credit is due. And so that's part of Bush's legacy now, is that he signed into law a bill that will provide $500 million, if I'm not mistaken, to build this museum, which is bigger than what I thought it was going to be as I listened to President Obama talk about it over the weekend at the official opening. And so, like it goes, it's like several stories down, going into the ground, below ground, and what have you. And so this listener just really provided answers to the questions that I asked, and it was good news. It was good news. And again, you know, we have talked about that on that program and other programs as well, and people expressing concerns dealing with what would we call it, astrology and the secret science, and what else, esoteric sort of imagery and all of that. And that, and some of that is true. But as I'm learning more and more, though, and they would acknowledge, because they mentioned the black people that's involved in all of that, that laid out Washington, D.C., Benjamin Banneker Bay, who I heard is a Moor. But again, as I did a video last week, all Moor mean is black. All right. It's a Greek word, Latin word for the color black, to describe the hue of Africans, going all the way back to the Roman Empire. That's why they describe Africans, even as Africans came out of Africa and brought civilization to the Europeans, who were also descendants of earlier immigrants out of Africa, but had also co-mingled with Neanderthals. But when the Africans, that wave of Africans that brought civilization to Europe, came into Europe, the Europeans referred to them as Moors or Blackamoors, or but that's all Moor means. It's a European word for black. So those things, yeah, you're right about those things. But let's also not exclude the black origins of these secret sciences and esoteric things that we're seeing in Washington, D.C. All right. So I'm going to take a station identification break, and then we come back. I'm going to quickly go over some of the news of the day that I think you should hear about. And then when we'll come back, get into some of these main topics. Again, let me give out the phone number. It is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Hit *6 and 1 to come in on air. And the studio line is 704-951-5030. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News on Black Talk Radio Network, a digital radio station providing the masses with new black media for the new millennium.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium. Welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Let me stop that right there. And so let me go over some of the news of the day real quickly. I'm on btrcommunity.com. Again, it is a new online black social experience, a safe digital space built for black people online, a social media platform. So this story I found particularly interesting. Police are investigating a slave catcher involved shooting in Garden City, Idaho. I don't know who the victim is, or the name is, or the person who was shot. I don't know the details. All I know is it's kind of a weird story. Here are some of the quick details. So the slave catchers of Garden City, again, this is in Idaho, were chasing somebody who was a second-class citizen, meaning he was on parole, so he had gotten out of prison. But, you know, they have lifetime punishment for people who've been in slavery so to make it easier to put them back into to slavery. So they second class citizen, get lifetime, you know, had their rights, certain rights taken away from them for a lifetime. So anyway, this parolee, this second class citizen, for some reason ran from slave catchers, jumped in a car. Maybe it won't be a slave. I don't know what they accused him of doing, what their probable cause, but I don't know why he ran. Anyway, he jumps in the car. He takes off. They chase him. They claim that they stopped chasing him because of high speeds and for public safety concerns. Now, here's the weird part. So the next time they allegedly see this guy and is said to be caught on security cameras at the police station, but the next time they see this guy, he's facing off against the police station in his car. And so he comes speeding in towards the police station, allegedly firing a gun out the window, the driver's side window. Apparently he was the only one in the car because I didn't hear about anyone else. Again, these are early reports. So he's allegedly firing his gun at these slave catchers while he's speeding toward the slave catchers' headquarters in Garden City. And four slave catchers are also firing at him, and I guess they ended up shooting and killing him as he crashes into the building. So that's a story that you can find posted. I posted. You can find on my profile page on my mainstream on BTR Community. I'm on BTR Community under Scotty T. All right, next story. About these protests, about the NFL protests, and I'm actually almost finished with an article that I started working on this morning. I think I'm up to like 500 words. I don't like to use too many words to get my point across because people's attention spans sometimes aren't that long. And so, but I was writing an article related to Colin Kaepernick's protests and other, you know, the issue being in the NFL and the things that it's causing, all these side related issues and what have you. And so as I was doing research for my article, I wanted to, you know, impress upon people, let's stop calling it the national anthem. Conscious people, people who believe in calling things as they are, correct, using correct terms. Let's stop calling it the national anthem because we didn't have no say in it when the racists who voted in Congress to make it the national anthem in the 1930s, we didn't have no say in that. So it's real. Let's use instead, let's call it the slavers' anthem. And that would be a correct term because Francis Scott Keyes was a racist. His family built wealth on the backs of the people that they enslaved, their victims. That's probably how he paid for law school. I know that's how he got to go to law school and become a lawyer and whatnot. And he wrote that song in the spirit of denying black folks, Afro-Americans, African enslaved Africans, whatever you want to classify them as, victims of slavery, wanted to continue to hold them in slavery. He wrote it, that song, while possessed by the spirit, an evil spirit, to deny other people their free will to profit off of their talents, off of their skills, off of their labor. That's what the song is celebrating. That's what it's upholding. And it is no accident that these racists adopted that as the national anthem at the same time that they were erecting monuments all and mostly the formerly Confederate states in the 1930s and what have you. North Carolina, again, I can't tell y'all just how important it is for North Carolinians, Afro-Carolinians, to register to vote and turn out the vote so we can get these racists out of office. And I've been talking about it on past programs. Some of the laws they have tried to pass that did not, that only got repealed because somebody challenged those laws through the court and they were ruled unconstitutional. And in some cases, specifically said were intentionally racist. So we ain't got time to be, we don't have time to be debating people about whether or not we should be voting when politicians are passing laws to strip us of our rights and make slaves of us. All right, we ain't got time to debate that. We got to get these people out of office. I don't care who becomes CEO of USA Inc. because they both devils. All right, so, but here in Afro-Carolinians, we need to turn out to vote. Because one of the things these racists did was, remember the last protest in Charlotte? The last time Jonathan Farrell, when Jonathan Farrell was killed, and some of the activists out there targeted it, these plaques that they had around Charlotte, put up by racists, honoring racist white enslavers. And they hit them up with graffiti in other parts of North Carolina as well. And so there were movements to pass laws to remove these monuments on the city level and what have you. And the Republicans been acting like the racist, fascist Nazis that they are, because they inspired the Nazi Party. And I am not talking about just Republicans. I'm talking about racist white people in this country, racist Americans. They inspired the Nazi Party. That's why they came over here to study your eugenics programs and other ways you was mistreating non-white people in this country. So Pat McCrory signed into law a bill that would prohibit the removal of these monuments to racist people who fought not for freedom, but fought to keep people enslaved, to deny other people freedom. And another piece of that history, I might well tell it now, I already mentioned it. I found today over 5,000 Afro-Carolinians picked up arms to abolish slavery in this state. And there was some hella battles that was going on in this state. I did not know how important those battles were, because with the railroad coming through North Carolina and them being able to supply other states further down the rail line, like South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, and further down, and what have you. So, you know, abolitionists during the lifetime of this racist song y'all singing, this enslaved, the slaver's anthem, even during his lifetime, abolitionists, black and white abolitionists, Native American abolitionists, they were ridiculing this man and saying and sneering and saying that America was more like the land of the free and the home of the oppressed. Where have I heard that before? I may have said it myself. I've seen other people use that phrase. And guess what? The spirit of abolitionism lives in you, because you're saying the same things that they said about these things that we're talking about today. See how time can, how hundreds of years can pass, but things remain the same, in the same battles, in the same issues need to be settled, either violently or non-violently. And it's been both all throughout this history. So I thought that was interesting that the Smithsonian would publish that article. Another article comes from Telesur. Evo Morales says Israel is one of the world's most barbaric warmongers. I said Israel is enabled by USA Inc., and which is the most barbaric and insidious of them all. I found out about a website. And they even get a Twitter account, and this organization acting like they're some kind of watchdog group against racism, but they don't call it racism. They call it anti-Semitism, which if you look that word up, it could refer to Jews and Muslims. But people misuse words all the time. They use them to their own end. And so anybody that is legitimately criticizing Israel's human rights record, not only against the Palestinian, but also against its own citizens who are black, and finding out that racism does indeed exist in Israel, that Jews are not a racial classification, but a religious one. And some of them white Ashkenazi, German descendant, European descendant Jews don't feel no kind of brotherhood and kinship with you Ethiopian African Jews. That's why they've been protesting, and that information is being suppressed here in the United States. For me, just even reporting on this story, I suspect would end me up on somebody's list talking about I'm being anti-Semitic, but I don't got nothing against the spoken word, because Semitic refers to a language, not one particular group of people. Use the dictionary, people. Anyway, let me continue to move on. It was a pretty good segment in sports about the national anthem on, I think it is Colin Cowherd's show. He has an ESPN show, I believe, sports show, The Herd. And there was a guy by the name of Nick Wright who was responding to a poll that says 44% of Americans are turning off NFL games if players keep protesting the anthem. And so, again, I don't want to give away too much. This goes to the article that I'm working on, that why I don't compare sports to slavery, because sports of professional sports are voluntary, slavery is not. That's why in the 13th Amendment it says involuntary servitude, slavery and involuntary servitude. So I don't compare the two, but I can't understand why some people would make the comparison because of some similar things going on. And what are some of those similar things? But when a group of people, especially powerful white men, NFL owners, the commissioners, the administrators of this nonprofit, that where billions are making money, it seems to me billionaires are making plenty profit off the so-called quote-unquote nonprofit NFL, and if they are coercing players to participate, I'm sorry, 626, you just called in the Black Talk Radio News. I will come to you in just a moment if you could just hang on. All right. So, getting back to this story, give me just a moment as I adjust my audio. All right, getting back to this story. You know, it just reminds me, slavery, one of the key things of slavery is when an individual uses his power and his free will to take away the power and free will of another human being. In its essence, in its bare nuts and bolts, as they say, that's what slavery is. Now, when we start talking about chattel slavery, and no, chattel slavery was not abolished. Chattel refers to real estate or property, and many of these private prison corporations are registered as real estate companies so that they can get tax exemptions and what have you. But again, when we do see other people trying to force their free will, this is the land, the home of the free, land of the free, and home of the brave, like you want to say, like Francis Scott Key tried to say, then why are you trying to force these people? Why are you trying to force your free will on them? You have a slaver's mentality. That's why. You think you have a right to force people to do what you want them to do. So I want to play this clip, and after this clip, after Nick Wright responds to this poll of 44% of Americans turning off NFL games if people keep protesting or players keep protesting the anthem. And so, again, what does protesting accomplish in this story? One of the things is they causing the people behind the system, behind the laws that have the most power in this system to lose money. That's an economic boycott. An unintended economic boycott brought about by the simple act of protesting. So let's go ahead and let's listen to what Mr. Nick Wright has to say about these Americans threatening to turn off NFL games if players keep protesting the anthem.
What they're saying is, Your lives are good enough. You have enough rights. We've come far enough.
Yeah.
Don't let it pollute my football. Like, how do you want this community to react? And how do you want Colin Kaepernick to start the conversation? Well, the answer is you don't. You don't want to have the conversation. Like, let me just give a personal anecdote for
sure,
a moment.
Sure.
So I live here now. My family's still in Texas.
That's tough, yeah.
I have an 18-year-old son. He's 6'3".
Good basketball player.
Kind of imposing guy.
Yeah, good basketball
player. He also happens to be black.
Mm-hmm.
We don't let him drive. He Ubers everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's for just the peace of mind as parents.
Sure.
Of what you know, how's he going to react if he gets pulled over? Is he going to be nervous? Is he going to be shifty?
Sure.
That is a reality for people. And Colin Kaepernick is trying to just say, hey, pay attention to it. And almost one out of two people are saying, being reminded of this makes me so mad, I'm not going to watch football. Yes, you're lying. You also might be a bad person.
Yeah, I would say is people lie about a bunch of stuff beyond race. I'm going to work out. I'm a good person. I don't believe in porn. So I'll never gamble again. So I understand your visceral reaction to it and your circumstances because I know you off the air in your life. But I would also say people lie. 44% of Americans lie all the time. I always tell the funnier story, the lighthearted story. I got once called by a survey about medical research, and the eighth question by a cute girl on the phone was, what's your sex life like? And I'm like, having it right now. I am unbelievable. I could go all day long. And I'm thinking to myself, been a month and a half. It doesn't matter. We are, deep down, we are vanity-laced, protectionist with our jurisdiction, with our space, with our life. And I agree with you. This is where I agree with you. People largely don't want to confront what they don't agree with.
Or what makes them uncomfortable.
Most people don't like discomfort. You and I have discussed this. So I agree with you. I think they're liars. I think Clay Travis and I disagree with this. This is Trump. He's a television star in America. Celebrity Apprentice was American Idol for a decade. He's completely manipulating the media, calling them live while Hillary hides. He is taking a million viewers every Sunday off of football. You and I grew up thinking football's bulletproof. It's not even Trump-proof. So again, people are making it Kaepernick. It's not. We like our football. We're going to watch our football. And Richard Sherman and Kaepernick are just making people uncomfortable, and we have to live with that discomfort.
The Richard Sherman thing's interesting because Richard Sherman, if you remember, tried to meet people halfway. Richard Sherman got into it with his teammate Michael Bennett because Richard Sherman said all lives matter. Richard Sherman tried to meet people halfway.
Generally doesn't work.
And what did he learn yesterday when he was fed up? I try to meet you halfway, you stay exactly where you are. I try to reach my hand out, and you back up further. This idea that if we do it the comfortable way, we won't kneel, we'll link arms. We won't say Black Lives Matter, we'll say All Lives Matter. The idea that, oh, that will get those people on our side, they are never going to be on your side. They won't. They hate what you represent.
Right.
And they will. And so Sherman yesterday, that was powerful. It was to me, a disheartened and discouraged, very intelligent man who realized there is no right way for me to do this where people are going to be like, oh, you have a point.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to stop it there. You can see the rest of the clip. It has several more minutes left in it. Again, it's posted to our new social media platform for a new social experience, btrcommunity.com. Now, we did have a phone call. Let me go ahead and go to the phone and let that person, looks like that person hung up. Okay. All right. So, give me just a second. Maybe they didn't. Skype has updated and still trying to work my way around it. Caller, are you still there? Okay. That caller is no longer there. All right, and the conference line is clear. So, caller, if you want to call back, do so so that we stay on topic. All right, so moving on. Next story. Already mentioned the Missouri Cure, Citizens United for Rehabilitation of, I think that's Corrections. I did link to their Facebook page, and they presented Max Parthas a plaque for his efforts and the efforts of New Abolitionist Radio. This is what the plaque says. You can see a picture of that plaque on btrcommunity.com. It says, Missouri Cure presents the third annual John Mayer Taylor Award, Maximum Partis in New Abolitionist Radio, this 24th day of September 2016, for courage, vision, activism, and mentoring while fighting for the rights of prisoners by exposing the truth about modern-day legalized slavery and human trafficking by the prison industrial complex. Here's another story. Belmont University expels a student after a racist Snapchat post. This is what I wrote about it. You had some players. I'm not sure what team this is. It looks like the Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah, it's the Philadelphia Eagles. So apparently you had seen some Philadelphia Eagles, American citizens, decide they was going to give a salute to Juan Carlos and his partner. I forget the other guy's name. I'm sorry. Who raised the Black Power fist to protest or as a demonstration and a show of solidarity with the people who were marching, protesting, rioting, whatever they was doing to fight against racist oppression in this country in the 60s. So some of these NFL players are raising a fist. So this is what I wrote, because, again, I've been listening to clips over the weekend, and people just... We just want to criticize everybody, man. Like, everybody is at the same place, emotionally at the same place, physically at the same place, intellectually. Like Malcolm said, don't be so quick to criticize somebody for what they don't know, because you at one time didn't know what you know. And again, there's no magic bullet that's going to end oppression. No wars have been won. No army fights that way. You have different divisions that focus on different activities. I mean, somebody got to wash the uniforms of the troops out there in the field. Somebody got to feed them. Somebody got to provide the communications equipment and network and a communications network that where everybody got a role to play. Nations posture on the international level through speeches and demonstrations, like walking out of a United Nations Security Council. That's a demonstration. That's a protest. So why are we blaming or saying stuff about people for these little things that do add up and do make a difference? So this is what I wrote. This is what the hater would say. What is an NFL player raising a fist during the anthem going to do? And the answer is, it is going to raise awareness about an issue, and it signals solidarity with the victims of injustice, and it brings the rabid racist out the closet, just like this university student, so that people don't buy into the post-racial hype, so that we don't have our children in some of these colleges and they got white roommates and thinking that their white roommate is good people or is their friend and whatnot, because y'all study together and share a room together and what have you. And then next thing you know, they posting racist Snapchat posts or racist social media posts because they done got so angry at the image of black people not going along to get along and taking a knee or raising a fist in solidarity with the victims of slavery and those abolitionists working to end it. So again, even little things can have a trickle effect or a ripple effect. You know, so again, don't be so quick to say what somebody's doing ain't making a difference, won't make a difference, because as far as I can see, nothing anybody has done has ended slavery or the oppression of non-white people anywhere on the planet, including Africa. So again, let's not sow seeds of disunity and what have you. Let me see. Think the rest of it is like North Carolina news. There's a story about one area here in North Carolina after 24 years getting permanent source of clean drinking water, as their poison they had to use bottled water and carbon filters for nearly 25 years. 25 years just here in North Carolina. And they finally got a source of clean drinking water after Duke Energy and other power companies then poisoned the groundwater in private wells with PCPs. So that's a story. Let me see. Same story. EPA names 173 companies in a $5.5 million settlement over PCP contamination in Wake County. That's here in North Carolina. That's some of that environmental violence that Dr. Reverend Barber was speaking on at that conference, in press conference of clergy in Charlotte over the weekend. Now, this last one, then I'll get to the main topics after I take a station identification break. The police in Richmond, California have investigated themselves. They've looked into the police sex misconduct with the underage teenager and found that 11 current and former slave catchers with connections to the teenage sex worker at the center of the scandal did not break any laws. They may have violated a few slave catcher protocols and what have you, but the investigation has determined that none of these slave catchers, current and former slave catchers, broke any laws when they had sex or aided and abetted this teenager when she was underage, and even when she became of age, she's 19 now, found that they did nothing wrong. Who's shocked? Who's surprised that they investigated themselves and found nothing wrong? And this is while the Los Angeles County prosecutor who's prosecuting Los Angeles, I don't know if it's Los Angeles just Police Department or a Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, but let's just call them all slave catchers, prosecuting them for a similar scandal. So now get this. This Richmond Police Department, actually the prosecutor who's looking for this girl, the Richmond Police Department in California bought this girl a plane ticket and paid for her to fly to Florida and to stay at some kind of drug treatment rehab center in Florida. This is why they know an active investigation, which she is the victim, is ongoing. This is what these slave catchers did right there in your face. It's like they daring you to do anything about this. This is sick, man. This is sick. So it's crazy that they could get away with that. And as far as I know, the Department of Justice, the FBI, is not investigating these people for what would you call that, interfering with an official investigation or a criminal investigation. I mean, these are crimes on top of the crime of them aiding and abetting a underage sex worker and having sex with her. And this girl is not lying, because she doesn't even see herself as a victim. She is very emotionally and mentally immature. And she doesn't even see anything wrong. And she looks at these slave catchers as her friends. She has Stockholm syndrome. She has the kind of relationship with these slave catchers that some enslaved people here in the United States pre-1865 have developed with the people that are enslaving them. It's like a survival or coping mechanism. So it's just, man, it's wild. Like I said, there's just not enough time in a day to discuss everything that's going on behind these enemy lines. So I'm going to take a station identification break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., where they are still practicing legalized slavery and human trafficking. We'll be right back.
Talk Media Project funds the use of new media technology in efforts to restore independent Black voices to the myriad of issues affecting Afro-descendant people all over the planet. If media can control the minds of the masses, as Malcolm X once said, then you must ask yourself, who is in control of the media targeting the masses of Black people today? Help bring back independence, self-determination, and respect for Black culture in the production of global media by joining the effort to crowdfund new Black media for the new millennium. Visit blacktalkmediaproject.org for more information on how you can invest in public Black radio for the masses.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Now, before I jump into some of this news, considering to give our listening audience some of the latest updates of what's going on the ground. I'm looking at this video and this I think that's my daughter. She looks almost exactly like my daughter. I'm looking at this video of this white male in this car brandishing a gun at peaceful protesters and then being escorted out of there without arrest, without being gunned down in his car, like Keith Lamont Scott was gunned down in the parking lot seconds after he got out of his car. Man, but before I get into some of these latest developments, we do have a caller on the conference line. Let me give out that number again. 641.
Hello.
Give me just a second, caller. Call us. Okay. The telephone number 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. And also the studio line is open. That number is 704-951-5030. Caller, thanks for calling in the BTR News. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call. Hopefully you're having the best that you can, you know, behind the enemy lines. I was calling because you were talking a lot about protesting and kind of the things that we can do. I'm not against protesting. I probably won't participate in a march protest, but I'm all definitely for boycotting and things like that, that I would probably be more likely to participate in. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to say I moved to a new area, and there were two churches in the area. They wanted to have this race relations meeting, right, to help, what can we do, blah, blah, blah. So I'm new to the area. It was in the newspaper, so I thought anybody could go. So I went.
Wow.
And you hear the same old, because hosted at the quote-unquote Black church, but there were a lot of white people there, whatever. So the white person comes, gives a history lesson, okay. We go downstairs, we're supposed to have these discussions, sit with people that are different. So I'm sitting with a bunch of white people. I'm supposed to be the representative for all Black people. So I'm clear to let them know. I don't attend this church. I'm just here. I do not speak for these people. I've been here twice because, you know, politics or whatever. So this is my second time in this place. I don't know these people that well so far. They were nice last week. You know, today I don't know. So, and I'm honest with them. I tell them, I say, I don't need to meet any more white people unless we're trying to solve the problem. I know plenty of white people. I don't need to meet any more. And then I told them.
You said what, though, unless you're trying to solve the problem?
Yeah, unless you're trying to solve the problem. I don't need to meet any more white people. I know enough. I know plenty. So then they were like, well, what could you do? I said, you can pay me, first of all. When you have problems with other things, you pay McDonald's when you're hungry. You pay taxes so your kids will go to school. You want me to solve a problem that you created, you can pay me like you do other people. I think they were shocked with that answer because that makes sense to me. They pay consultants for everything else, don't they?
Yes, they do.
So, you know, they were kind of shocked with that answer and whatever.
Yeah, they fund studies and all kind of things like that. So you're right. People are getting millions of dollars to do those type of studies and provide those type of answers. So, yeah, you're right.
I mean, I just told them. You know, they look shocked. So I figured these people weren't that serious because they look like, oh, my God, payment. Yeah, mm-hmm. I said reparations, consultancy, something. So I went on. So the groups got bigger. Then we had a big group. And then the wife said, oh, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I said, stop it. I just told him, I said, stop it. You're lying. I said, this is what you can do. And I gave him a couple of solutions. Then I think the black church, because they were hosting, they kind of cut me off. I think that they thought I was scared of people. So then they kept it moving. And then, you know, at the end, it was all over. The white people were very polite. They were like, oh, thank you so much. We need somebody to be honest like you. Blah, you know how they do. Very polite. Okay. So then I go to the black minister who's the host. And I'm like, I hope I didn't embarrass you. I'll try to be clear that I'm not a member of this church. I know how people get, blah, blah, blah. And then this is what he said. He said, well, you could come upstairs, but these discussions were just for the people of the ministry. So I was like, are you serious? I'm thinking to myself, are you serious?
Then why did they put it in the paper, if I may ask a question, if it wasn't open to the public?
I don't know. I read it in the newspaper that this is what they were going to do. Why would you publish it in a local paper? Is this not some? I don't know. I've lived in this place 40 days. I don't know.
Perhaps to give the appearance that I'm doing something while not doing anything that's really going to solve the problem?
It could be, because I, like I said, I don't know. I just went, I told them what, I gave them my feelings. I said, like I told them, I don't need to meet no more white people. Pay us to solve a problem that you created, because the man who gave the history lesson clearly said the white people in charge perpetuated the racism and slavery. That he clearly said that. So if they did it, they want somebody else who's different to fix it, pay me. And they were like, well, what should you do? I said, stop blaming the victim. Stop making us explain to you how you keep messing up, and you know what you're doing.
Right.
I don't. It was very clear. And I think, maybe I made the other black people nervous because they were like, oh, no, here comes one of them. But
what's one of them? Black people who speak plainly? And don't.
I guess. I don't know.
I don't know.
So I was like, well, I guess this is not the place for me.
Okay.
And I just have to keep it moving. And I just, you know, I'm still committed. Because I told them, I said, my people need help. I can't be helping you and my people. I can't do both. Unless you got some resources. So I'm not saying don't give up. But just, you know, if one don't work, you know, this group obviously is not going to work. Because I'm not a member, so I can't get into detailed discussions. But, you know, stay strong. Find what you can do. I told them about the city council thing. I'm going to go to city council, see what's going on. That's what we need to do. But that's where the laws and stuff are made.
Right.
So we get the right laws. That, and we don't have sagging pants laws and all these stupid things.
Yeah, that impact you locally, as well as how much taxes you going to pay the slave catchers that's knocking you over the head, shooting you in the street, and starting the process to put you into slavery.
Yes. So that is all. Thank you so much. Good show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that battlefield report.
Q&A queue is cleared.
I thought that's a good answer. Pay me to solve his problem. I got some solutions. We'll think tank it and we'll, what do they call it, focus group it. So, yeah, write that check for about $1 million, and we'll complete this study in a year. Pay us. Wow, that was a great call. Thank you. All right, so moving on to Charlotte. There were five days straight of protest in Charlotte. I do not know if they are protesting in Charlotte at the moment. I do know heavy rains hit the area overnight, and they did get the police department the slave catchers to release the video, which was demand that the family had asked for, as well as the protesters in support of the family. So what did that do? What did protesting do? Well, it helped the family achieve one of the things that they was asking for in this long process for justice that may very well not end up in anybody receiving justice, but still people got to go through the process. What you going to do? Just say, oh, well, my husband's dead and I guess there's nothing I could do about it. Or are you going to do like logical thinking people do, that hire attorneys and then seek to uncover evidence so that I can take you to court and obtain reparations for you murdering my husband? Not to mention the wider implications outside of the family. So anyway, the video was released. If you have not seen the video, I have. I don't even need to see the other ones at another angle. Several things about that video. I am not convinced that the black slave catcher fired the shots. If you watch the video of the dash cam, the uniform officer driving that particular vehicle from the video that the dash cam is from, he's a uniform officer. He pulls up in a uniform car. He has on all blue, like he has on the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department slave catcher's uniform. As soon as he moves on the scene, he goes up to that white pickup truck, which was next to Mr. Scott's SUV. He takes up a position, pointing his gun at Mr. Scott, who's still in the vehicle. He then makes his way to the front of the truck. Then you see him go around the bushes that are behind the truck, as well as Mr. Scott's vehicle. And it appear to be other slave catchers in there as well, at least one other one, so two maybe. But I did not see any melanated skin. But when you watch this one uniform officer, watch him closely as he goes around that truck, goes around the bushes, and then the next thing you know, you hear he's got a gun, or I can't remember what was said, and then bam, 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 within seconds, Mr. Scott gets out, was backing up, hands at the side, at his side, and bam, 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 and then that uniform slave catcher runs the way he came from back behind the bushes. Now, if you also watch that video, the slave catcher in the red shirt with the body armor vest on goes in his pocket. Looks like he hands, if I remember correctly, hands it to the other slave catcher and they drop it on the ground. It looked like a gun to me. I'm being totally objective here. People who know me know I don't get on here and lie for ratings or anything like that. I don't care about those sort of things. All right. It looked like a gun. I cannot definitively say it was a gun, but it was a black object he pulled out his pocket. Other people have slowed that video down and also pointing out what looks like slave catchers planting evidence. So that's what that video shows, and I don't need to see anymore. Don't need to see anymore. I don't care the debate. Mr. Scott's alleged second-class citizenship status, since he was a felon, I don't care about his cannabis use. I did not see anything occur that would justify the escalation to deadly force. I didn't see anything. Again, if you're scared, you shouldn't be a cop. If I was a punk, if I was scared, if I was always fearful of things, I wouldn't have never joined the military. So I don't care to hear those excuses either. But it's interesting when we see this video taken by a Charlotte area reporter. I think that's where she's from. Videos now being posted to YouTube, and it clearly shows a white male in a yellow, looks like a one of them six-cylinder Mustangs, you know, like the basic model, not the GT or the ST or anything like that, just the regular basic model Mustang. That would have looked like a gold color or yellow. And he clearly, now he knows that there's protests going on. Why would you try to drive through a street full of people? Would you do that during Speed Street in Charlotte or any other festivals that they have? You know these people, thousands and thousands. Why would you try? Why would you try it? You don't have to drive down Tryon, the main strip, all them little side streets off of Tryon that you could have got to where you were going without driving through Trade and Tryon, the main square, where all these people are congregated. This was purposeful. This person was looking for trouble. So you see him brandishing the gun. But most disturbingly, more disturbing than that, is a CMPD slave catcher. You see him go up to the car, confront the man, and then allows the man to drive off. I don't know what was said between the slave catcher and this thug, but I do know this thug was treated a lot differently than Mr. Scott was. And this thug was in the commission of a crime, although we have an open carry state. State law specifically prohibits the open carry at a protest, anywhere near a protest, during a state of emergency. You can't do that. And not only, he's not open carrying, as would be his Second Amendment right, or his rights as afforded to him in North Carolina by his state constitution. But the laws of the state cleared for the sake of, I guess, public safety, that when people are expressing their First Amendment rights in situations and tempers are inflamed, that you don't go where there is a crowd of these demonstrators and protesters to exercise your so-called Second Amendment right, which does not include threatening people. I'm going to play the clip. You could just hear what you can hear, but you really need to see it. Now, I do not know what that loud flashbang grenade was, but not only did this one slave catcher, CMPD slave catcher, go up to the car, which I take that back, that's not a Mustang. I'm not sure what kind of car that is. But not only do they go up to him and not arrest him after they see him brandish this firearm at peaceful protesters, but then they escort him out. They give him directions on backing up and how to go down Trade Street, headed towards Johnson C. Smith, you know, how to get out of there, off of the main strip where people are protesting. They didn't arrest this man. They didn't gun him down either, obviously. That gunshot you heard, or whatever that loud bang you heard, was not slave catchers putting their lives on the line and protecting the safety of the public by shooting this gunman dead as soon as he pulled his gun out and brandished it. There was hesitation. There was running up to the car to de-escalate it. And I take that back. I did not see anybody run from him when he got out the car with the gun and when he first rolled up and within seconds pulled the gun out. And Breitbart.com is lying. Didn't no protesters confront him and whatnot. These people weren't even facing him. He came up behind them in his vehicle. And then when people turn around seeing his car rolling up on them, and he immediately pulls out the gun. And that's when they say he's got a gun. And others are saying, I heard one girl say, don't do it, sir. Don't do it. And then the sled catchers, about five of them, at least five of them, two of them responded to the car itself, had words with this criminal. And then two other ones gave them directions on how to back up out off of Tryon Street and get on Trade Street and get out of there. If that does not speak perfectly to why people in Charlotte is out in the street and why people all over this nation of all different backgrounds have been turning out, protesting this element of slavery, the brutality of the slave catcher, the killing of the slave catcher. We'll see if this video makes corporate media newscasts. Give them about 2 days. Usually that's how far they are behind when something's posted on the internet, but I don't see why. They had the ability to instantly throw up stuff. But we'll give them 72 hours, 3 days. But I suspect it will be suppressed. A publication out of the United Kingdom published a story on it, but that's all the corporate news story I have seen on this, other than Breitbart News, which I wouldn't really put them in the mainstream. That's a right-wing, racist, fascist blog. And they're trying to spin it and make it look like this man was being threatened by the peaceful protesters. Let's see. Now, again, I just wanted to address, it's not that I'm fussing at anybody or I'm blasting on anybody. I just want people to start considering that during these times and periods of unrest, our young people out there in the street, or anyone out there in the street that's not only just protesting but organizing and recruiting people who may just be out there for the first time and have never done involved in nothing like this, and say, you know what, I just can't stay at home no more. I gotta go out here because I'm angry. They just keep killing us. And then that's how they are then recruited into an organization. So don't sit up back and say protesting don't solve nothing and what does it accomplish and who you protesting against. You protesting against the slave catchers whose salary you're paying because they're taking your taxes by force. So, you know, I thought that when people pay for something that they want good service and they don't pay to be mistreated or be oppressed. So anybody that's paying taxes, I don't care what you do, it could be said that, hell, you funding the system. If you are not, you know, so again, but you will pay taxes because you don't want to go into slavery. So don't be criticizing people when you know, because you got fear of that system too. That's why you adhere to certain laws and this and that, even though you try to claim that you don't, but you know you do. You don't engage in certain things because you don't want to be made a slave. So protesting does accomplish things. It's an outlet for people who have spontaneous outbursts of anger and sadness after seeing video and the pleas of family of yet another man gunned down in the community by slave catchers. So it's that outlet of people who are suffering from daily occurrences of traumatic stress. So why you want, that's victim blaming too. You know, when we generalize people, and the way the Charlotte protest kicked off, it wasn't no protest. It was an uprising. It was a spontaneous uprising that turned violent after the slave catchers used heavy-handed tactics to try to force people to disperse because the crowd was getting too large and people were expressing, making, expressing verbal, angry verbal sentiments about another person being killed by slave catchers. And then it spread from there. There were protests, different protests by different groups all over the city. I was reading about a roving group of about 200. And an interesting story was told that there was division among those protesters because some protesters wanted to shut down the interstate. Others didn't. Others wanted to do something else. Some wanted to engage in violence and said, let's burn this mother down. Others wanted to keep it peaceful. So there was this unity among those group, that small subgroup of protesters. You can't put everybody in the same box. But reportedly, they agreed to keep it nonviolent, and they marched on the government center and what have you. So there are different groups all over the city. It ain't just no one organization. It ain't no one group of people either. That's what the racists and propaganda media want you to think, that it's only black people in the streets. When I would say that I would estimate some nights it's been at least a third of the demonstrators have been non-black people and been Hispanic, but people of all ages. So, I mean, we want to criticize people, but then we want to ignore that our ancestors engaged in the same thing. All people engage in the same things, regardless of their skin color. So it ain't that our people are retarded or anything like that, or they're childish for engaging in a demonstration, whether it was nonviolent or violent outbursts. Our ancestors and some of our leaders in the past have spoken on it. So let's listen to this interview that Martin Luther King Jr. gave when suspected racist and white propaganda media was asking him, basically putting pressure on him, to condemn those who weren't marching peacefully and engaged in some violence. Again, to cause disunity, to paint a picture that don't exist, a false perception. So let's give a listen to that. It might be an ad that play. This comes from CBSNews.com, a 60 Minutes interview, MLK. And we'll look at what he said about it. We might get hit with an ad for the WWF like debate that they planning between Clinton and Trump tonight. Okay, no, it's not an ad about that. All right, let's skip this ad.
In the air.
60 Minutes Rewind.
Now what I'm saying is this. I would like for all of us to believe in nonviolence, but I'm here to say tonight that if every Negro in the United States turns against nonviolence, I'm going to stand up as a lone voice and say this is the wrong way.
I will never change in my basic idea that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to the Negro in his struggle for freedom and justice. I think for the Negro to turn to violence would be both impractical and immoral.
There is an increasingly vocal minority who disagreed totally with your tactics, Dr. King.
There's no doubt about that. I will agree that there is a group in the Negro community advocating violence now. I happen to feel that this group represents a numerical minority. Surveys have revealed this. The vast majority of Negroes still feel that the best way to deal with the dilemma that we face in this country is through nonviolent resistance. And I don't think this vocal group will be able to make a real dent in the Negro community in terms of swaying 22 million Negroes to this particular point of view. And I contend that the cry of black power is at bottom a reaction to the reluctance of white power to make the kind of changes necessary to make justice a reality for the Negro. I think we've got to see that a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the economic plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years.
How many summers like this one do you imagine that we can expect?
Well, I would say this, we don't have long. The mood of the Negro community now is one of urgency, one of saying that we aren't going to wait, that we've got to have our freedom. We've waited too long. So that I would say that every summer we are going to have this kind of vigorous protest. My hope is that it will be nonviolent. I would hope that we can avoid riots because riots are self-defeating and socially destructive. I would hope that we can avoid riots, but that we will be as militant and as determined next summer and through the winter as we have been this summer. And I think the answer about how long it will take will depend on the federal government, on the city halls of our various cities, and on white America to a large extent. This is where we are at this point, and I think white America will determine how long it will be and which way we go in the future.
All right, I'm going to stop it there. Now, again, both Dr. King and Malcolm X during that time period, as you know, the media, well, for those that have studied these videos or these news broadcasts and peeped how they were trying to play the two camps against each other, and there's always going to be differences in agreement and tactics, but everybody got their place in the movement. And towards the end, right before Martin Luther King was violently assassinated in a conspiracy plot carried out and initiated by the federal government, this is factual, people, okay, this is factual, but he had come to embrace the militant arm of the movement, and his last march was guarded by armed guards of the Deacons for Defense. Okay, he became more militant in his views as he could see that there are just millions and millions of racists in this country who, no matter what you do, no matter how you march nonviolently, are going to use violence against you. And it is just absurd to keep thinking that people are going to allow themselves to be attacked without defending themselves. So they like to show earlier periods of him speaking, but they rarely often share his later speeches and collaborations with and what have you with other groups, more militant groups. But again, when people feel that they have no power, when they see that they're being starved of resources and nobody cares that they're being gunned down and what have you, well, you have these outbursts of violence. And like he said, they aren't being listened to. So he said riots are the voice of the unheard. You're not hearing them, so they're going to make you hear them. And what I like here in North Carolina is, when I was watching the press conference, those people advocating for nonviolence, including Dr. Barber and others, Minister Corinne Mack, both of them are the NAACP, they didn't fall into the trick of the enemy. Because, see, we've had time to learn from watching these clips of the past how they try to turn, cause division in the community and getting us to condemn violence of protesters or violence of those who aren't part of the nonviolent part of the movement in those particular organizations that train for these sort of things, and get you to say bad things and denounce them. And he basically said the same thing that Martin Luther King said, but in a more refined manner. He would not.
and he turned the focus on the few people who, the very, very, very few, who use acts of violence, and he's turned it on them and started talking about the violence of the state. So, I was happy to see that. Let me see. This is what Malcolm X said about riots. And again, there is a difference between a riot and a protest and a demonstration. But if you ask me, they all achieve a certain tactic in warfare. And I call it warfare because that's what it is. People are dying.
Well, if there is danger of race riots in Washington at this time, it isn't because Adam Clayton Powell says so. He might have announced it, but this is, if such danger exists, it has existed before Powell even made the statement. I will give Powell credit for being bold enough to repeat what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has been saying for 33 years, and most other Negro leaders are trying to make white people think that they have things so well, so much under control that there's no chance of Negroes getting out of line. As long as they thought that Martin Luther King had things under control in Birmingham, Kennedy didn't see fit to send any troops down there. As long as the dogs were biting little black babies and black women and black children, Kennedy never thought of sending any troops into Birmingham. It was only after the Negroes showed that they were fed up and that they were capable of retaliating against the injustices that were being inflicted upon them by the whites, that Kennedy called for the troops. And I frankly don't believe that he sent troops down there to defend Negroes, because if he had wanted to defend the Negroes, he would have sent them there when the dogs were biting the little black children. He sent them there only after the Negroes became fed up and showed that they were just as capable of defending themselves in Birmingham as they have been capable in the past of defending America on the battlefields of Korea and Germany and these other places.
All right. Oh, mentioning veterans, he talked there. There was a clip I saw out of Charlotte of a veteran. I think this guy was active duty, and he's showing this slave catcher his dog tags and questioning the slave catcher's rules of engagement. For those that don't know what that term means, it refers to who you can and cannot shoot on the battlefield. And he was saying that he is under stricter rules of engagement on a battlefield in Afghanistan then it appears that slave catchers are on the streets of America, that they have looser rules of engagement. They're just able to just gun down people for a variety of reasons, whereas if he was to gun down certain people on the battlefield of Afghanistan in some of these villages and towns and what have cities that they're occupying, that he could get in trouble. If he punch, kick, psychologically abused, you know, as a soldier, regular soldier, I'm not talking about the CIA and military intelligence who, you know, they definitely get away with that kind of stuff. But average everyday soldier, no. The Spec 3, the Spec 4, I'm sorry, yeah, the PFC 3, Spec 4, the sergeant, I would say, maybe even staff sergeant, sergeant first class, I don't think they would be allowed to get away. Now, I know many of them get away with it, though, anyway, so let me just be real about that. But they're not supposed to be getting away with a lot of the stuff that they get away with on the battlefield. But apparently, you know, this U.S. veteran who might have been active duty, he's out there too confronting them. I'm over here fighting in Afghanistan, and he hasn't woken up to the fact that it ain't got nothing, him being over there ain't got nothing to do with freedom or democracy or liberty for Afghanistanians and what have you, Afghanis, when people are being shot down by slave catchers, and we got 2.5 million people, vast majority of them in modern slavery and victims of human trafficking, you can't even say that they committed a crime, a real crime, to harm anyone. So some of the stuff and images I've been seeing coming out of Charlotte, and closing out on this protest stuff, link to an article, African American Abolitionist Tactics, Protests, Demonstrations were among the things that the 19th century black abolitionists utilized as an array of tools to challenge slavery and claim equality. Nonviolent tactics such as freedom suits, literary protests, anti-slavery speeches, and petitions. What are freedom suits? That's where lawyers were filing lawsuits. Find things unconstitutional and whatnot. Literary protests, what are they talking about? They were talking about propaganda. They're talking about abolitionist newspapers, forms of media. I don't think they had radio back then. In fact, I'm sure they didn't have radio back then. But that would be something like New Abolitionist Radio today. Anti-slavery speeches, like what went on at the Missouri Cure Conference over the weekend. So different black folks who helped found this nation, who helped tame this land, so to speak, have always used different tactics, including protests and demonstrations, in the fight against slavery. So I don't got nothing to say to anybody to criticize. I'm not going to be out there because I don't see where I can help people, or that's my strong suit or my area. If, you know, enough people turned out, thousands of people, they didn't need Scotty out there. Scotty is needed to be on these airwaves and giving you the truth that's coming out of Charlotte instead of the propaganda and the disinformation that you're seeing on corporate media and these racist outlets. So, and again, I came across another article, and there have been over 100 protests and demonstrations just this year on this subject, or sparked by slavery, slave catchers killing people in the process of trying to enslave them. Alright, so let me see if there's anything else that I need to cover that I did not cover. There is one other thing. I'm going to take a short station identification break. I think I missed one at the half hour mark, but I want to share over the airways this email and thank a listener for answering the question that I had or posed on air about this African American museum in Washington, D.C. that just opened over the weekend, and if it's promoting racism and white supremacy, because some of the news reports I was reading was, they portrayed it like the history was going to start with slavery and then, you know, the Civil War period, and then on from there, or if it was going to portray all black people, whatever label, term you want to use, more indigenous black folks, black people, free black people, free black colonists, or as if it's going to portray us all of being descendants of the victims of America's slave trade. We know we all been victims of racist policies, patterns and practices under the color of law, but we have not all, in fact, descended from enslaved Africans. So I'm gonna read the email after this short station identification break that the listener who went to the African American Museum in Washington, D.C., who found it quite eye-opening on the history.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. As I stated, I was emailed by a listener who lives in Washington, D.C., who heard my program and questions about whether or not the full history of the black experience on this continent, in terms of the founding of the United States of America, which could not have happened without black men with guns, and I would even dare say black women. Maybe their histories of militant protests and participation has been suppressed. But wondering if any of this history would be covered in this museum. And this is the email. Hi, Scotty Reed. I'm currently sitting in the pavilion at the recently opened African American Museum, and I wanted to tell you that black rifles do matter. And they did, in fact, cover black participation in the military, starting with the Revolutionary War all the way to today. The contributions of black people on both sides of the war were covered, including loyalists that assisted the British in exchange for their freedom. Also covered were the Nat Turner Slave Rebellion, the Deacons for Defense, the Nation of Islam, and the Black Panther Party of Self-Defense. As a lifelong Washingtonian, this was probably the most detailed museum I have ever visited, only rivaling the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History. As admission at this time is limited to pre-ordered tickets, I won't be able to visit again until possibly December or the next year, but I will certainly like to return to see all the things I miss. P.S. I'm a big fan of your show. Keep up the good work. And again, as I wrote back to them, I'm pleasantly surprised to hear that real history, real American history, it ain't just black history, but the history of Afro-descended people in this country is being told in this manner in this museum. Because I was definitely skeptical, as we should be skeptical about anything that's involving racist suspects. I want to give credit where credit's due. This has been a long-time effort of Georgia Congressman John Lewis. While I disagree with many other things he has done in Congress as a board member of USA Inc., but this right here, I think, was a worthwhile effort. Because now black children will see in this country that their history doesn't start nor end with slavery or getting off a slave ship and stepping onto a slave auction block. That is not the entire black experience on this continent, but that is what you would believe it was if you were educated in the public school system. You would have to take African American study classes in special type courses in order to uncover this real history, unless you're like me and you use the internet to dig it up yourself. So now also white people will go in there and they will receive a blow to their white supremacist indoctrination to make them think that they did this, created this nation all by themselves. Because indeed, without the black rifles, the black muskets of the day, without those men free and enslaved joining the Continental Army, the British would have won. They would have won. But all throughout that history, we see the betrayal of these freedom fighters by the racist, wealthy, white enslavers who built their backs, built their wealth that has turned into generational wealth, not by the sweat of their brows, not by their hard work, not by their talents or any kind of work ethic, but by using their power to enforce or impose their will on other people, taking away their power and free will. The monument to the great betrayer Lincoln has to go. The Washington Monument has to be renamed. They should blast the faces off of Mount Rushmore and replace them. Makes no sense to think that you're going to foster any kind of harmony and unity when we're standing up at sporting events, singing a slaver's anthem, paying homage to racists, slavers, and liars like Lincoln. So, history is very, very important. I was listening to some of the comments of Barack Obama, the CEO of USA Inc., in some prepared remarks he gave at the opening. And I was impressed with how large this building is, or how large the museum is. You can't, if you look at it from the outside, if you think it's just one floor, or if it's just two stories or three stories, it actually goes several stories into the ground. And black people, African Americans, however they choose to classify themselves or label themselves, have donated family heirlooms telling the story of their family's black experience on this land to this museum. So, based on this report from a person who was there, I would say I'm pleasantly surprised, and I'm glad that this museum was created. Because now, again, you'll have these high school students going there on trips, and they will be like, well, that ain't what y'all said in history class last week about the American Revolution. Y'all talked about Thomas Jefferson. Y'all talked about George Washington. Y'all didn't dwell on the fact that these were racist enslavers, and Jefferson in particular was a vile man, as he was holding African women in sexual bondage. I think Sally Hemings was as young as 14 years old when he set his filthy paws on her. And they didn't say anything about the black free colonists. They made you think they didn't exist. And none of that's in these school textbooks. So this is worthwhile. This was a good investment, because now these children will learn. And adults will learn. They go through there that they've been lied to their entire lives. So, that's my program for today. Coming up here at 6 o'clock p.m., just a couple of more minutes, will be Tando Radio Show. And I will be back on air tomorrow, which is Tuesday, September the 27th, in this year they call 2016, at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Reading is important. Knowing real history is important. Studying that history is important. But what's more important is that we treat everyone with the respect that we would want them to treat us. We don't want people talking bad about the activities we are engaged in that we think is going to get us free. Then we shouldn't place undue criticism on the activities of others who look just like us, who are engaged in activities that think that that's the path to freedom. Instead of antagonizing each other and making enemies of each other, causing disharmony and disunity in the community, see where your efforts intersect and coordinate, which Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, too late in their lives, found out that the two men were being played against one another. It is no this tactic or that tactic. It is by any means necessary. I just wish those two men would have lived longer, if not being assassinated by the United States government, and they would have worked out their differences and combined their efforts. I wholeheartedly believe this based on the direction that both men were headed in when they were murdered by USA Inc. So, it's focused on the areas that we can unite and not disparage others in order to prop up what we're doing. That's just, I've always viewed that as weak. I used to think nothing was weaker than some dude. Let's just use this scenario. We both like this girl. And so I'm going to be nice to this girl. I'm going to give her gifts. I'm going to open the door for her, you know, if she goes out with me or when I'm interacting with her. I'm going to be very respectful and just, you know, answer any questions truthfully about myself. And that's how I'm trying to gain her courtship or her affections or whatnot. But the other person, their strategy is to bad mouth me and tell lies and untruths and things they couldn't possibly know, and poison this girl's mind. Again, I've always looked at that as being weak in the dating game. You got to talk bad about somebody else to make yourself look good. With that, you know, don't be that person. Just don't be that person. Focus on what you're doing. Work with those of like mind. But that should not involve minimizing or criticizing the efforts that other people are involved in. Maybe somewhere down the line, the two will meet and their tactics or the war efforts will converge. Peace and blessings to all. Again, y'all be safe out there. This is Scotty Reed signing off from this broadcast from behind these enemy lines.